Order, order.
The drums of the Royal New Zealand Air Force Band heralding the country's new Governor General, Dame Patsy Reddy, who was sworn in during a ceremony on the steps of Parliament House on Wednesday. Following the arrival of VIPs and honoured guests at 11 a.m. and the entrance of a Royal Guard of Honour accompanied by the Air Force Band at 11:35, the official party, including the Prime Minister and his wife, the Speaker of the House, David Carter, Chief Justice Dame Shan Elias, and the Clerk of the Executive, Michael Webster, were escorted onto Parliament's forecourt by the Herald of Arms, Philip O'Shea. That was at 11:43 sharp, and 2 minutes later, that party greeted the Governor-General-designate and her husband, Sir David Gascoigne, who were then welcomed by an official pofferty. Following the pofferty, which included a ceremonial challenge, a karanga, or call of welcome, a series of hongi between the Governor-General and mana whenua, and a haka imitating the hauling ashore of a waka, Dame Patsy received a general salute from the Guard of Honour. Once the official party had taken their seats, it fell to the Clerk of the Executive, Michael Webster, to read the Commission of Appointment signed by the country's head of state, Queen Elizabeth.
We do hereby direct and enjoin our Ministers of the Crown and other officers and all other inhabitants of our realm of New Zealand to take notice of this our commission and to comply accordingly. Given at our court at St. James and issued under the seal of New Zealand, the 2nd day of August 2016, in the 65th year of our reign, by Her Majesty's command.
Then, following a short introduction from the Chief Justice, Dame Shan Elias, Dame Patsy took the affirmation of allegiance and affirmation of office.
I, Patricia Lee Reddy, solemnly, sincerely and truly declare and affirm that as Governor-General and Commander-in-Chief of the Realm of New Zealand, comprising New Zealand, the self-governing states of the Cook Islands and Niue, Tokelau and the Ross Dependency, I will faithfully and impartially serve Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, Queen of New Zealand, her heirs and successors, and the people of the realm of New Zealand in accordance with their respective laws and customs.
The affirmations were followed by a performance from the New Zealand Opera Chorus and the sound of fanfare from the Air Force trumpeters. And then it fell to Herald of Arms Philip O'Shea to read the proclamation.
Now, therefore, I, the Governor-General and Commander-in-Chief, aforesaid, hereby proclaim and declare that I have this day, by way of affirmation, taken the prescribed oaths before the Right Honourable Dame Shan Elias, Chief Justice of New Zealand, and that I have assumed the said office of Governor-General and Commander-in-Chief in and over the realm of New Zealand.
Before moving on, there was one last piece of housekeeping.
God save the Queen!
The Governor-General then received a royal salute from the Guard of Honour and Air Force Band, which was accompanied by a 21-gun artillery salute from Point Jerningham on Wellington Harbour. After inspecting the Royal Guard, the Governor-General was the subject of an address from the Prime Minister, John Key.
We are here today to welcome Dame Patsy Reddy as the Governor-General of New Zealand. Dame Patsy is New Zealand's 21st Governor-General, and the third woman to hold the position. When I announced her appointment, I said that New Zealand is well regarded for gender equality.
Dame Patsy takes over the role from retiring Governor-General Sir Jerry Mataparai and will hold the office for a term of 5 years. In her reply to the Prime Minister's welcome, Dame Patsy said she would draw on the experience of her predecessors.
In particular, Dame Cath Tizard and Dame Sylvia Cartwright, two inspirational women who I would wish to emulate in my own way. Dame Cath and Dame Sylvia challenged norms and expectations by stepping into public leadership roles at a time when women were not easily accepted as leaders. Their success helped shape a world where young women and men can forge a path in whatever career they choose. Like every Governor-General before me, I bring a unique set of skills, experience and knowledge from my own upbringing and career, which has spanned both the private and the public sectors. And this has helped me determine a pathway by which I hope to make a lasting contribution.
Dame Patsy said four themes would underpin her role as Governor-General.
Creativity, innovation, leadership and diversity. I believe they will be key drivers of a strong, successful and vibrant country in the years ahead. Creativity in all forms inspires and nourishes the Wairua within us. It is what identifies us as New Zealanders. It connects us with our tipuna and our cultural traditions. And it feeds into the innovation that we need to succeed as a forward-looking 21st century nation that can contribute and prosper in ways that are environmentally sustainable. Leadership, to me, is about unleashing the potential that exists within us all, individually and collectively. As Governor-General, I can play my part by acknowledging success and achievements and by championing those who are prepared to assume leadership roles, whether at school, community, local or central government, or in the private and public sector. I want to encourage greater diversity within our leadership, drawing on the experiences of all of those who've chosen to make New Zealand their home, from tangata whenua through to our most recent arrivals from all parts of the world.
The Governor-General ended her speech after thanking Sir Jerry Mataparai for his time in the role.
And so, I look forward to the new opportunities ahead to uphold our constitutional framework and to serve the Queen of New Zealand, our nation, and my fellow New Zealanders in the best way I can. Thank you. Nō reira, tēnā tātou katoa.
Dame Patsy's speech was followed by a waiata from the choir and band, another royal salute from the Guard of Honour, and the singing of the national anthem. The ceremony was followed by an official reception at Parliament's Banquet Hall on Wednesday afternoon. Later in the week, the Clerk of the House, David Wilson, sat down with Tom Frewen to talk about the constitutional role of the Governor-General.
I wondered if we could have a look at some of the statements in the opening chapter of Parliamentary Practice in New Zealand by Dave McGee.
Sure.
And it says, "The Parliament of New Zealand today consists of the Sovereign in right of New Zealand and the House of Representatives." The Sovereign is the Queen, but how does she come to be in right of New Zealand, and what does that mean?
Well, it means that Queen Elizabeth II of England is also separately the Queen of New Zealand, and has been since 1952, and it's a role that she is also the Sovereign of 15 Commonwealth countries, but separately from each other.
In right of, though, does that actually mean by virtue of occupation?
No, I think it's taken to mean in respect of New Zealand.
What is the relationship between the Sovereign and the House of Representatives?
Well, together they constitute Parliament, and that's really based in quite ancient British constitutional history, where their Parliament was originally an advisory council to the monarch. But the Sovereign now, usually through the Governor-General in New Zealand, performs some quite important functions in respect of the House. The most common one is giving the royal assent to all legislation that's passed by the House, by which when the House passes a bill, it has its third reading, it's checked by the Clerk of the House to make sure that the bill being given the assent is the one that was passed by the House and nothing else. Then signed off by the Attorney General to show there's no legal reason not to pass the law. And finally, the Prime Minister signs it, advising the Governor General to give this bill the assent. And that's quite often the time on which bills then come into force.
And what is the relationship between the Sovereign and the government?
Well, the Sovereign is the head of the executive government. So ministers form the Sovereign's government, but govern on his or her behalf in the form of representative democracy we have and a constitutional monarchy. It's said that the monarch reigns, but the government of the day rules. So it is the one that carries out the day-to-day functions of governing the country. The Sovereign also appoints the Prime Minister and then the government based on where support lies in the House for particular parties, so who can command a majority in the House.
Right, but then the Prime Minister and his government recommends the appointment of the Governor-General.
That's right, and so it's a cyclical arrangement. Those two things don't happen at the same time, though, and I imagine deliberately so, so that the newly appointed Governor-General was appointed by the Queen on recommendation of the current Prime Minister, but following the next election, it will be the role of the Governor-General to invite someone to form a government and therefore to be the Prime Minister.
New Zealand's constitutional theory, according to parliamentary practice in New Zealand, proceeds on the basis that there is within the state a source of authority, the Crown, which carries on the government, but which calls its subjects into its presence in Parliament for the purposes of consultation and ratification. Now, first of all, what is the Crown beyond being a brand of limo?
Well, the Crown is the sovereign. So Queen Elizabeth II of New Zealand, represented by the Governor-General, unless the Queen is in the country. Some statutes also include the sovereign's government in that definition of the Crown, reflecting the fact that the government of the day governs on behalf of the sovereign.
So the sovereign calls its subjects into its presence in Parliament for the purposes of consultation and ratification. Is this the same thing as the Governor-General summoning and proroguing, whatever that means, and dissolving Parliament?
Yes, so that is an important role of the Governor-General to summon a new Parliament, and that's important because it gives New Zealanders certainty that there will always continue to be a Parliament, and following an election there won't be a time in which the country doesn't have a parliament.
So there's a mechanism there for that to happen.
There is a mechanism. The dissolution of a parliament is carried out on the advice of the Prime Minister, and that's a formal notice from the Prime Minister to the Governor-General asking him or her to dissolve the parliament, bring the life of that parliament to an end, and therefore call a general election. At the same time as doing that, the Governor-General will then issue a proclamation summoning the new parliament. And although the date that they set is a notional one, which will probably change depending on the results of the election, it is that signal to people that there will be another parliament and that governance in New Zealand will be carried out by an elected body. Proroguing parliaments doesn't really occur anymore. It used to be the way of bringing a parliamentary session to an end, which were usually annual sessions, but New Zealand doesn't sit in annual sessions anymore. In practice, it has 1 3-year session, and so we don't see parliament prorogued.
Now, who's the boss of whom here? Can the Governor-General dismiss the Prime Minister?
Not in the usual sense of dismissing an employee or an appointee. The Prime Minister is the leader of the party commanding a majority in the House. If a party or parties lose the confidence of the House, in other words, if they no longer can control a majority of seats in the House, the Governor-General will then invite the leader of another party to form a government or group of parties. If that also fails, then the Governor-General can call another general election. So the Governor-General can't normally dismiss the Prime Minister, but circumstances may change whereby the person who is the Prime Minister no longer has a majority in the House. The only circumstances where the Governor-General could dismiss the Prime Minister would be if a Prime Minister, having lost an election, refused to resign from office but had no mandate to continue. In that circumstance, the Governor-General could do that. Or if the Prime Minister lost the leadership of their party, as has happened from time to time there, the party stays in government, but they're overthrown by another member of that party. If they then refuse to resign, the Governor-General could also dismiss that person because they have no basis for claiming the title of Prime Minister.
It all comes down to this majority in the House, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah.
I guess this is what is meant by whatever the precise arrangements. It is the political situation as represented by the members selected to serve in the House, which determines who is to govern, not the whim or the pleasure of the Crown. And this is a fundamental convention of the Constitution.
I think one important thing about the role of the head of state in whatever system we have is exercising that independent judgment about appointing a Prime Minister based, though, on the will of the people as expressed through the election. So again, who has the majority in the House?
The Clerk of the House, David Wilson, with that reminder that power is exercised according to numbers, the most important of which is the number of seats in the House, which in turn is decided by the number of votes for parties and MPs in the general election. Parliament's adjourned for another week, back on Tuesday, October the 11th. I'm Rhys Lyon reporting for parliamenttoday.co.nz with funding from Parliament.